I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here, and welcome to Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, I'm looking at the results of the election. These big elections, this big blue wave, turned out to be more like a blue ripple, but it had the effect that people saw coming. The House of Representatives will now be switching over and will be controlled by the Democrat Party. I wish them all the best of luck. I honestly do. I hope they do things that are good for the American people. I am an American, and therefore they are my Congress, and I hope that they have some great ideas. I hope that their plans take into account all of the good things we've done in the past 2 years under President Trump. I hope we continue to grow the economy, make better trade deals for our country, and help each and every one of us do better in life, because we have opportunity and we have freedom. That's really what it's all about, opportunity and freedom. It's not about the government giving us anything. It's about the government getting out of the way and letting us rise to our potential. But a couple things I did want to talk about. If you go over to the platform at AmericaOutLoud.com and you look under the bloggers and you look for Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, my most recent column that I just wrote and I put up over there, I'm trying to encapsulate all of this, give my thoughts about it. So basically, the title, I think, is important. When you write an article, you know, you want the title to convey either an idea about what the column's going to be about, or you want it to provoke a thought. Sometimes you want it to be funny. Other times you want it to just really catch people. So this one is called Voting, an Inconvenience to be Overcome. So what does that mean? Voting, an inconvenience to be overcome. I'm looking at these elections, and everybody's hash was settled. Okay, the Democrats won the House of Representatives, fair and square, and the Republican Party added a seat or two to its majority in the Senate, fair and square. Now we have to deal with that. We have two more years of President Trump till the next election. We now have a Republican Senate and a Democrat Congress to deal with in 2019. Okay, fair enough. What's going on in Florida? Why is it the same counties in Florida cannot seem to get their act together and follow the rules and report in a timely manner the outcome of the vote? Now, I could see if it was the Panhandle counties. They just got wiped out by a hurricane. They still managed to recover themselves, do their voting, tabulate their votes, all within the guidelines of Florida and federal law, and report the outcome of those elections. But in Broward County, parts of Dade County, they're still counting votes. How is that possible? So the idea of this article that you'll find on the America Out Loud page is Voting an Inconvenience to be Overcome. It kind of seems like this is a, I don't know how else to put this, this is a basic tenet of American life. This is one of the bases on which all of our freedom springs from. The ability of each and every one of us, each man and woman, to go into a voting booth, press a lever, make a mark, do something on a ballot, to decide our own destiny, our own future, what we want to happen in our country. We often take this for granted, because what we see is around the world, not everybody gets to vote. And if they do, their votes are manipulated to meet those in power, to serve their purposes. You know, look at the Soviet elections. How is it that every Soviet leader gets 99.9% of the vote, and the challenger always gets 0.1% of the vote in all of these communist countries where they have these fake sham votes? You know, down in Cuba, they have the sham votes, all of these places. Because the government in power takes the voting booth as a propaganda tool to enforce their power. Oh, we won 99.9% of the vote. But we're fair. We have an open election. We could have been voted out. Does anybody really think any one of those communist leaders would have left if the vote went the other way? No. Joseph Stalin said something, and I'll paraphrase. He said, the people's vote means nothing. The people that count the votes mean everything. So the purpose of this column is really to point out, are we heading that way now in America? Is that happening to us? So forever, we've always joked about, you know, a running joke is, dead people vote in Chicago. Well, that's a joke, but it's really not. I mean, it's true that in the Democrat strongholds of Chicago, lots of the people that are elected, they get votes from people who are dead. And that's because there's corruption, there's manipulation of the vote, and we have a running joke that, well, that's what happens in Chicago, dead people vote, and it's no big deal. But what's happening now, are we seeing that kind of scam elsewhere? Are we seeing the Chicagoization, and that's my word, the Chicagoization of our election system? Are we seeing people in power who are now saying, well, we're not going to go by what people vote for. We're going to manipulate it so how it comes out however we like. Look what's gone on with President Trump. Now, whether you like this man or not, he ran for president and he won. So therefore, he gets all the power of president and he gets to put in his policies and he gets to pick the people he wants to help him do it. And he runs the country. If it doesn't work out, if we don't like what he did, there's another election. We have another election. We vote him out. This transfer of power in the American system is one of the most powerful things we could ever show the world. We have leaders of different parties, different philosophies, take over every 4 years, and they switch power back and forth without a shot being fired. They got voted out, they step down, they leave office. In other countries, they start wars over that. They bring in troops, they have revolutions over, well, we got voted out, we're going to fight. It's an amazing blessing we have here in America. My concern is, like everything else, all the other traditional American things, we are slowly losing that. So when I look, and let's go back to the election of 2000, when we had everything came down to George W. Bush and Al Gore, Vice President Al Gore, came down to the Florida tallies. Now, Florida has specific laws, like most states do, that says within a certain amount of time, you have to report the outcome of the election. You have to report if there's a count still going on, how many ballots you're counting. Every 45 minutes, somebody has to make a phone call and let somebody know, keep the election commission aware. Well, in that case, in 2000, we saw that everybody thought Al Gore was going to win. They really didn't want George Bush to be president. So suddenly, in these Democrat strongholds, extra votes started showing up. And then the votes that were not really clear what the person intended were being judged by partisan members of the local voting commission to make determinations of what the people meant when they turned in their ballot. So we had that month-long politicized nonsense of the Florida election where it went back and forth. George Bush brought in his attorneys and Al Gore brought in his attorneys. And the two parties were battling back and forth, and basically it went to the Florida Supreme Court, where the Florida Supreme Court took a political position and said, well, you know what, we're going to let them keep counting. Even though the law clearly says when the counting is over, they said we're going to let them keep counting because they were trying to move an agenda. Because the more they counted, the more they were opening the door for nonsense, for political shenanigans, for boxes of votes to show up. That may be verified or unverified, but then we heard the screaming of everyone, make sure every vote counts. Every vote must count, and therefore you have to count them all. Well, a lot of the votes that are counted and are being counted today in 2018 down in Florida are provisional votes. And a lot of people have, well, what's a provisional vote? Well, if you go in and you have your ID, and you have, it matches your registration at your polling place, they verify that's you, and now you go vote. If you walk in without your ID, if you walk in without any proof of who you are, but you say, hey, I'm Joe Pangaro and I live here, they are to say, well, we can't verify that, so here's a provisional ballot. You fill it out, we throw it in the provisional ballot bucket. When the election is over, we'll have a group of people go through these, and we will determine if you are indeed Joe Pangaro and you had a right to vote, then we will count your vote. So a lot of them can easily be faked because I can vote in my county in, say I live in Lee County in Florida. I can vote in Lee County legally, that's where I live, and I vote. Now I go down to Broward County and I walk in the door and I say, hey, listen, I live here in Broward County and I need to vote. Here's my name and number. Well, they can't find any registration, so they let me do a provisional ballot. They throw it in the pile. Now, if I do that and 50,000 other people do that, illegal aliens might be doing that. They can't prove where they live, so they do a provisional ballot. Now you have a box of 50,000 votes, and after the election, they're supposed to verify each vote. But in a case like this, like in 2000 and now, there's political pressure to count every vote because we don't want to make it sound like we're disenfranchising anyone. You count every vote. That's what they mean when they say that, count every vote. They're not saying count the votes that are on the books. They're saying count those provisional ballots that can't even be verified. They just want them counted. So now you count those additional 50,000 votes that may be bogus, maybe double votes, maybe triple votes, could be illegal aliens voting, and they want to throw that into the total. And normally when that's done, it's done for a particular purpose. For one party or the other, it's a trick, it's a scam. Doesn't mean that some people don't have a provisional ballot is legitimate. People forgot their ID, whatever. They just moved to an area, whatever. That's a very small number. Most of it, I have to say, on face value, looks like a scam. So now they're screaming once again in 2018, count every vote. Take those votes, provisional or not. We have to just assume that they're legitimate, and you throw them into the pile. On top of that, we now have people showing up days after the election is over. Guess what? I found a box of 40,000 votes in the back of the school where the election was held. Really? So the election people left a box of 40,000 votes in the school. They didn't have an accounting of how many boxes they had. They had no idea. Who walked the box down the hallway and left it in a closet? Who put that there? I've seen over the years where they've had boxes of ballots that were in the trunk of the car of the people who worked the polls. Why are they taking boxes of ballots into their personal car and bringing them home? Ballots that haven't been counted. And then suddenly the election is over. We have a result. And then there's this this conflagration that, oh, wait a minute. There's thousands and thousands of ballots that haven't been counted by mistake. And they count them. And it's funny, though. You know, as law enforcement, you like to say there's no such thing as coincidence. I could see that if one of these things happened and we open up the box of ballots, and it's either split between the two candidates, you know, roughly split. Maybe one candidate gets a little bit more than the other, 55%. The other gets 45%. Okay. But when it's about 95% towards one particular candidate in all of these locations where these problems take place, common sense demands that you look at that closer. Common sense demands that you say, wait a minute. What's the chances that every single vote in that box that showed up late, out of nowhere, can't be accounted for, is all for one candidate? And ladies and gentlemen, I don't remember an instance ever when those extra ballots that were found went in favor of the Republican candidate. I'm not being partisan. I'm just looking at the facts. I've never seen boxes and boxes of extra ballots that went towards the Republican. They almost always go towards the Democrat. So when we do an investigation, we look at the facts. We don't look at personal belief. We don't look at assumptions. We look at facts, and we let the facts lead us to where they take us. So here you have these highly Democrat counties in Florida always causing this problem. There was never a problem when Barack Obama was the president. There was no delayed vote by 3 days and boxes of ballots showing up 3 days later. He won outright, and that was the end of it. But now, Democrat has won. Or Republican has won, I'm sorry. And that doesn't fit what they wanted to happen. The big blue wave, they wanted to take all this stuff, the Senate and the governorship and everything. So suddenly, here we are again, when it means something nationwide, thousands of these votes mysteriously start to appear, and they're almost exclusively for the Democrat candidate. Well, we have to look at that. Then we have to look at the people that are in charge. The woman who's in charge down there apparently has had problems with elections in the past where she's been censured or other actions have been taken against her. Apparently, in the Debbie Wasserman Schultz case, she was in charge of that election also, and there was some discrepancy, and she destroyed thousands of ballots on her own. So how do you know they weren't all Republican ballots? But she destroyed them for whatever reason she made it is, and she's still in a position of authority. She's still running that election down there. So what's going on here? You have to ask the question. I don't care what side of the fence you're on. This looks like fraud. This looks like a problem. If they attack our elections, one of the foundational pieces of being an American, a fair and just election, if we remove that from part of what it means to be an American, then we no longer have an America. We have the next America. Do you see how all of this fits together? Now, I'm not a conspiracy person. I'm an investigator. And I just connect the dots from one thing to the next. When I see what happened with the 2016 election, where Hillary Clinton and her party set it up to disenfranchise the Bernie Sanders voters, I don't believe in anything Bernie Sanders says. But I'll tell you what, he was cheated. That's not right. If he ended up being the true representative of that party because he won, that's who should have been the candidate. But they set that up so that even in places where he won primaries, he didn't get the votes because it was set up to give them to Hillary. That is taking away the will of the people. So they do shenanigans. The dead vote for Democrat candidates in Chicago. It's anecdotal, but we all know it happens. So when you start to look and you say, well, how come we don't have, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the dead always vote for Republicans? That's not an old saying because that doesn't happen. It's on the Democratic side that we normally see these irregularities, these problems, these boxes and boxes of votes. And if you're a Democrat and that suits your needs and you're okay with that, you really need to think about that. You're subverting justice, you're subverting the will of the people because it gets you what you want. I don't like it when my side loses an election. I don't like that the other side wins. But I don't go out and do anything to change that other than to make my case with my point of view, to make my case so that people will say, hey, that's a better idea, let's do it that way. You don't steal elections in America. Because if you're stealing elections, if you're doing illegal things, if you're doing trickery and deceit so that your side wins, you're robbing everybody of justice and freedom and honor and everything that it means to be an American. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to leave it right there here in round one on Chasing Justice. Look back in a couple minutes with rock and roll race car Jack. Jack will join me today for a one-on-one about this and everything else going on in the world. We'll see you in a minute.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice at our new time frame, 3 p.m. All right, it's nice to be here in the afternoon. It gets us closer to cocktail hour, we like to say, sometimes we're around the neighborhood. So we were lucky enough to be on Viewpoint with Malcolm from America Out Loud the other day, and Ava Armstrong. So we had a great time, and we got to talk to more people out there in the America Out Loud world. So today, in the neighborhood, it's going to be a smaller neighborhood today. Today we have my friend Jack, who I affectionately call Rock and Roll Race Car Jack. Jack and I are going to do a little one-on-one here, talk about some of these topics, because everybody seems to really like Jack's opinion. I think he has a great voice for radio, and he's a handsome devil. So, Jack, I'm glad you're here today.
I definitely have a face for radio, that's for sure, Joe. Good to be here.
That's great. Well, Jack, one of the things that we're looking at that I want to talk to you about is the elections. You know, we had elections last week, which were supposed to be country-changing. You know, there was this big talk about this big blue wave that was going to come, and the Democrat Party was going to sweep these elections, the Senate and the House, and they were going to take it over and basically go after Trump and crush him and straighten out all this nonsense about tax cuts and freedom and liberty and jobs and all that, and revert us back to the days of President Obama, when we had a very difficult economy, lots of high taxes and all that. That's what it seemed like they were going for. So we've seen the results now overall, and we see that the Democrats did win the House. They did win 30-something seats, which is historically actually low for recent times. When Obama lost his first term, he lost the House by 60 votes, I believe. George W. Bush, he lost it by 50-something votes. So Trump losing 30 is still a loss, but it's smaller margin than those other two presidents. What I want to talk about is not so much that blue ripple which came in, because we held the Senate, the Republicans held the Senate, and they actually added a couple, is the ongoing nonsense that's going on now afterwards down in Florida once again, where a couple of counties in Florida cannot seem to count their votes, and all of a sudden boxes of votes are showing up out of nowhere. And guess what? They're all for the Democrat candidate. Thousands and thousands of votes that somebody just left in a school, forgot in the back of a bus, and now we find out the Democrat candidate lost, but here's all these votes. And remember, we must count every vote, even if it's in violation of the law, the timeline, and everything else. What say you, Rock and Roll Jack Patterson?
Well, listen, myself, as well as I think every American, is we're all ready to get back to work. We're all ready for our government to get back to work. What's going on down in Florida right now is just a travesty. Does anybody believe that all these votes could possibly be for the Democratic side and there's nothing going on? Nothing going on here. You know, never mind the man behind the curtain.
Right. And that's what's amazing is that I think was it Governor Scott, who's now Senate-elect Scott down there, had a 60,000 vote win. And now I think he's down to 15,000. And boy, they have hundreds of thousands of more votes to still count.
Yeah. Yeah. How many more votes do we have to go through? How many more times do we have to go through this across the nation? I mean, this has been going on for many, many years. There's got to be some kind of electoral situation where we can control this, where this can be monitored. I know that it's supposed to be, but obviously it's not.
Well, it's amazing. We have how many kinds of different technology television stations you can buy. They manage to go right into your bank account only and take out their $8.95 a month, but we can't register a vote where you push a button, you do a fingerprint scan that we know it's you, Jack Patterson. You push the button, your vote is immediately tallied. We can't seem to come up with that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the write-in ballots. A lot of it has to do with the absentee ballots. They're using these as a way to funnel votes to their side.
It's a good point. So I've written an article that should be up on the AmericaOutLoud.com platform very shortly, if it's not up there already. It says voting to get over on our voting system is the concept of the whole article. Do we see dirty tricks going on? And now it's funny, because how many times have you heard through your life, your adult life growing up, that dead people vote in Chicago? That's right. And it's like the butt of a joke, right? That dead people vote in Chicago, because we know Chicago is a corrupted type of a town. But we didn't think that really happened to the rest of us until 2000. In 2000, the presidential election, we saw suddenly, all of a sudden, thousands of votes started. We're only going to recount certain counties where they think Al Gore, who was running for president at the time, was going to gain more votes. They didn't want to check all the state of Florida, just these one couple of particular counties, the same ones we're looking at now in 2018 that are causing all the chaos. And we started to see that this politicized our system. The Florida Supreme Court started to overlook the laws of Florida elections and just keep counting, because the chant became every vote must count, even if they're faked up, even if they can't be proved that they were the people who actually voted for them. They have no idea where these boxes of votes come from. How did they forget them? How did the Election Commission have boxes of votes at a building and leave them there, or leave them in the back seat of a car? It starts to look like corruption, and it starts to look like people are using that to play games.
Without a doubt, there's corruption afoot, as they say. These votes that are being counted, some of them, the people who place these votes can't be accounted for in the state. But yet, we're going to still count those votes. Why?
Because every vote must be counted.
Every vote must be counted as long as it's Democratic.
Well, it's funny that you never see boxes and boxes of votes show up for the Republican candidate. Now, that you just don't you find that strange that, like, in the panhandle of Florida, which is very, very conservative, usually always votes for the Republican conservative candidate, how come they just got wiped out by a hurricane and they managed to vote on time, get all their votes in, count them all up, and send them in the right way? But these highly Democrat counties where we have all this chaos, it's days and days later, and they still don't have a count. They won't tell anybody how many they have left to count, but the numbers just keep growing for the Democrat candidate. That just, it smacks of corruption.
It's got to be corrupt. There's got to be a better control of the system, and I'll tell you why. Here, when I voted, my poll opened at 6 a.m., and it closed at 8 p.m. That was it. That was my window to get that vote in, regardless of what was going on in my personal life, my working life, what have you. If I wanted to vote, I had to be at that polling place at that specific amount of time. And if I couldn't get there, my vote was not counted. My vote didn't count.
Right.
You know, these votes that are coming in Florida, what is the cutoff period? How long must we count? How long must these persons who are being voted in before they can go to Washington and take their seat? Because they might have to give their seat up, depending on how long the counting goes. If the counting doesn't go the way that a certain group wants it to go, will there be more? Will more boxes be allowed to be brought in? Is there a box in the back of a school bus somewhere that we haven't counted yet that's going to be counted, that's going to unseat whoever was elected at this time?
And that's exactly, when you look at it, there are laws in place. There are timed laws. Like, you have to, and I'm paraphrasing Florida law, is that once the election closes, you have every 45 minutes you have to update the election commission on the counts you've had. Well, these people are going days without updating. And when we want to send in monitors to see what you're doing, how you're looking at these ballots, no, nobody can come in. It's secret. When you have secrecy over something like this, now you start to say, what are they doing? How does anybody have confidence that this is legitimate now? This has been days, and suddenly thousands of these votes are going to change the will of the people who on the end of election day had made their choice. Now these votes are going to change the will of those people to go the way that certain party wants it to go in an area that party controls completely, right down to the counters of the vote. I think it was Joseph Stalin who said, the great communist, the people that vote don't matter. The people that count the votes matter a lot.
Yes.
Think about that, ladies and gentlemen out there in Chasing Justice Land. My point, and the point of my column on AmericaOutloud.com, is this. Our vote is sacred. It is one of the principles that separates us, the freedom that you, the person listening to me, you get to go in and determine your future. By pulling a lever, pushing a button, marking off a ballot, you have a right to do that. And now we have groups of people that have decided, hey, it didn't go the way we want. We will just manipulate the ballots. We'll find extra ballots. We'll change the way the machines work to take away your vote from you. Do you realize if we lose that principle, that underpinning of freedom and justice, this potentially changes our country into something it is not? Jack?
Unfortunately, in some of these states, all you have to do is bring a piece of paper with you that has an address on it with your name, such as an electric bill or what have you, to vote in that state. Now, if I have dual residency, where my primary residence would be in the north and my secondary residence would be in the south, these people are taking this and using it as a right to vote in both states as an absentee. And these are being counted up when that shouldn't count.
Right.
Your primary residence is the only place that should count.
Right. Now, these provisional ballots, okay? So this is a big talk. A lot of these votes that they're counting up are provisional. So if you walk into the polling place and you say, hey, listen, I live at 123 Main Street here in South Miami. I just don't have my wallet. I have no ID. But who is? Okay, we're going to let you vote. You fill out a card because we don't know who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
You vote, and then we'll take that's a provisional ballot. We're going to put that over here. And when the election is done, we're going to look at those provisional ballots and see if we could prove you were who you said you were and you had a right to vote. Well, the whole chant of every vote must count is what these people want, is they want those votes to count whether they've been vetted out or not.
They're gonna negate the process of finding out whether or not these people are legal citizens of that state.
Vote 20 times on
provisional
ballots.
Absolutely.
And we have thousands of those.
Certainly.
And now, you know what? We got to count every single vote.
Certainly.
Don't disenfranchise people. They voted, those votes count, and they're all bogus.
Now, some of the Midwest states where all you have to do is produce an electric bill or something of that nature to show that you live in that state, or that county, whatever you happen to be voting in. If you recently moved, or if you have your mail sent to your sister's house and your electric bill sent to your house, can I vote twice?
Right. And I think they've caught people down in Florida who have voted twice now. Now, this is a small...
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, they have.
They're there. And I think the woman who's in charge down in Broward County, she was pointed out that in several past elections, she destroyed ballots that were there because she decided to get rid of them. She actually destroyed them, didn't count them, and she was held to account for that. But she's still in position of authority. Now she's running this election down there, and she's doing it secretly. A court just stepped in Florida and said, no, you have to allow people in to monitor what you're doing. So you know what she did? She made them stand behind glass where they could watch what they were doing, but they couldn't hear a word people were saying.
No.
And the whole idea is to get the count number down so low that it goes from simply counting the votes that are there to a recount, which is a machine recount. We're going to recount all the machines. And if you can get it even lower than that number, there's a trigger point where now we have to go through that hanging Chad nonsense again, where what they are allowed to do, the commission in each county is allowed to look at those ballots individually and say, well, listen, there's a name, Jack Patterson here, and there's a circle under it you're supposed to fill in if I want to vote for Jack. That circle's not filled in, but there's a pencil mark near Jack's name. So we determine that that person intended to vote for Jack. That's a vote for Jack. Now, who's deciding that? If you can't figure out how to fill in a little dot or punch a hole all the way through the ballot, how is that a valid ballot? Because someone else is determining, well, I think this hanging Chad means Jack wanted to vote for this guy. And almost every case, it was the Democrat that those votes are determined to have been voted for. How is that fair to anyone?
It's not, of course, but is electronic balloting the answer? And electronic only. No write-ins. It would negate write-ins.
Right.
It would make electronic voting only. It would make it so basically, if you were out of state, you couldn't perform an absentee ballot. Mm-hmm. You would have to go to your state and vote in your state electronically only. I mean, is that the answer?
I don't know, because electronics, like any mechanical device, it would be prone to failure
and can be manipulated.
It can be hacked. There was where was it? I think it was again down in Florida or one of the Carolinas, where they were showing people, how the machine works, and as the example, you were looking at the examples, and they were all marked for the Democrat, and you pushed the button and registered the vote.
I believe that was Florida.
Even in New York had the sample ballot, and all the Democrats were marked off on the sample ballot. So there's ways to manipulate things if you have that control. So let me ask you this. Have you ever seen large amounts of dead Republicans voting in elections?
I've heard tell of it.
Dead Republicans?
Or absolutely. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Dead people vote is very important, because I feel the people that don't speak at all are a heck of a lot more intelligent than some of the people who are speaking.
No, and I agree. Dead people vote all the time. But we see dead Democrats vote. See dead Republicans voting.
No, not necessarily.
That's my question.
No.
We don't see that, that wave of people who turns out that they were dead voted. They all voted Democrat.
Yes.
And I find that interesting that they manipulate it that way. We don't see these large Republican counties anywhere in the country having problems days later. And guess what? We found a truckload of votes for the Democrat county candidate. I just don't see that.
So by that, can we say that the Democratic Party is the party of the dead?
Well, I don't want to make this too political, but I think we can't get around it. When we look at the last election in 2016, we saw that Hillary Clinton, as the candidate, and her party set up the process so that they could disenfranchise Bernie Sanders voters. They built that into the system. And what do they scream all the time? She got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump nationwide, so the Electoral College has to go. So we want New York and California to choose everything, is what they're saying when you get rid of the Electoral College.
Right.
Now, look at the Bernie Sanders primaries with Hillary. In several of those, he got more votes than her.
Oh, yes.
But the way the system was set up, she got the majority of the primary votes to move her forward.
Yeah.
Because isn't that disenfranchising people? Isn't that manipulating the rules? So we know they did that. Then they did all this nonsense with the Department of Justice and the FBI, this faked-up investigation of Trump. They used the wheels and the power of government to affect the election. When it didn't affect the election and Trump won anyway, now they're using that same exact power to try and remove him and thwart the will of the people. I don't care if you like Trump or not. The reality is we allowed this to happen, and we know that it happened. And the scary, half the population is not stupid. They know what happened here, that this was a game that was played, and they're okay with it because it serves their purpose. Is that America?
No.
It's not America. Is that dangerous? Do you realize, people, what's happening to us? We are being played with this. I don't care if Obama won the election and he won it fair and square, and then the Republicans turned around and used the power of government to go after him, to destroy him, to change the outcome of the election, I'd be the first one to rise up against that. Because I don't care if I don't like the guy or his politics or her politics. If they win fair and square, that's what it is. That's why we have elections.
That's the will of the people.
Thank you, Jack. Well, listen, we got a little heated here, buddy, you and I sitting here. I think, ladies and gentlemen, remember our sponsors here. And thanks for listening in. And it's a short, it was a short session today with the neighborhood, me and Jack. So we're neighborhood enough. Our sponsors, True Security Design, Pangaro Training, my company. We do threat assessments. We do training for businesses, schools, and for any type of group that needs safety and security training. You know, with all the active shooter incidents that are going on, it's a terrible thing to have a business like this, but it's responding to a need. So if your people in your religious facility, in your school, in your business have not been trained, reach out to me. Let's talk about what you need and see if we can make that happen to make people safer. That's what we do at truesecuritydesign.com, jpangaro.com. All right, Blue Magazine. We're going to have one of the editors from Blue Magazine on very, very shortly to talk about the magazine, how it's gone nationwide now. So www.thebluemagazine.com is really tremendous. So I want to thank everybody for being here in segment two, round two, with Rock and Roll Race Car Jack. We'll be back in a minute on Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here in round three. You know, recently there's been a lot of conversation about the incidents of active shooters we've had again. Now, this conversation never seems to go away. But most recently, we had the attack in Pittsburgh at the synagogue, a religious facility. And then most recently, we had the attack on the country dance club in California, where 11, 12 people were killed, 13 including the shooter. So this topic, again, does not go away. This past weekend, I was on Viewpoint with Malcolm Out Loud, and it was one of the topics that we talked about was the shooting. So I'm trying to think of what can I do for you out there in the Chasing Justice audience, for my law enforcement brother and sisters. We live this stuff. We preach this stuff. We know how to prepare ourselves when we go out. But for everybody else that listens to Chasing Justice, I'm looking for some tips, some things I can pass along to you to try and help you keep yourself and your family safe. So I go back and I'm looking at some columns I've written in the past with some different things. And I wanted to see if there was some tips I could throw out there. So I wrote a column called Danger at the Mall, Preparing for a Violent Incident. And so the purpose of this is the holidays are coming quickly. They're going to be on us before you know it. The shopping has already begun. We can see the commercials on TV and the radios. We see the people trying to get us out to the stores to buy things, and that's great. And anybody that knows about my writing and has listened to me here on Chasing Justice knows I preach a simple message. Be aware and prepared. We cannot be paranoid. We cannot live our lives hiding away. We have to go out and enjoy our lives, live our lives. But at the same time, we need to be aware and prepared to respond if something bad happens in front of us. So I'm hoping very, very strongly that the outdated and now dangerous thought that it'll never happen here is finally starting to pass from our consciousness. That's a twofold point. Number one, it's unfortunate that we have to live in a world where you could go to the movies, you can go shopping, you can go to a religious service where you want to pray to your God, and some crazy person can come in and attack everyone and take your life. But that's where we are. So I'm not going to bemoan that part. That is a reality. That's the world that we live in. We have a couple of choices. Go around door to door and confiscate everybody's guns, which is unrealistic, and I wouldn't support that at all. Or number two, we can be aware and prepare, and we can get ourselves out there and try and do the right thing as best as we can. So, our malls. If you're involved with a mall, you know, I think of here in New Jersey, a couple years ago, we had a guy show up at the mall with a rifle. It was a big mall, one of the main malls in northern Jersey. A lot of people, a lot of stores. And he came walking in there, and he was firing some rounds, and everyone expected that it was going to be a bloodbath for sure. And people started to react. And one of the people that reacted was a young girl, about 17 years old, who worked in one of the clothing stores. And she had been trained by her company what to do in the event of an active shooter. She was to close the main doors, you know, the grates that come down, close that down, and anybody in the store, take them in the back and secure them. Well, this guy comes in and he starts firing rounds. Well, this young girl did the right thing because she was trained. She heard the sound of gunshots. She knew what to do. She hit the button to close the gate, and all the customers that were in the store, she brought them into the back, and they all hunkered down. Now, that incident, how that turned out, that young man was suicidal. He didn't hurt anybody else. He ran into the mall, fired some rounds, went into the back, and shot and killed himself, which, thank goodness, he limited his damage just to himself. But the fact is that young girl reacted quickly because she knew what to do. Are you involved with a mall or a store or a business or a religious facility or somebody you know and love working or serve in one of these places? What do they do to help prepare people for this? You know, this is gone is the day of saying it never happened here. We all know that that's ridiculous now. So we need to get ourselves ready. So what can work? All right, so the mission of the facility dictates the type of security you can have. Obviously, a police department can be locked up tight because we only have a door for people to come in and make a complaint. The people behind the glass are usually secured by specialized glass, so they're safe and they have no access to the rest of the facility. A religious facility like a synagogue or a church is not quite as secure because people have to get in there. They have to go in and have their worship services. People come in and they get services from our religious facilities. People go in just to pray to their God. So what can we do? Well, we can limit the access to these locations. All right, you have one door in and one door out. The basic model for anything, whether it's a school or a business or anything, is to limit the access to your facility and then have somebody watching that access. You know, who is coming into the facility? What does suspicious person look like? Right, we can't have any stereotypes in our head of what a suspicious person looks like. We have to go by the behaviors of the person. So if you see somebody walking in, and I'm going to use as an example the club in California. Now, I wasn't there. I'm going on what I heard from reports. But the guy was all dressed in black, and he was wearing some kind of a heavier coat or a trench coat type of thing. It's been described in some articles. Well, what are you wearing a trench coat for? Was that to hide his weaponry? Was that to hide his ammunition? I don't know. I don't have a full picture of that yet, so I don't want to discuss it completely. But suspicious is the behaviors of somebody. We know that if somebody comes up to any building today, you walk up to any building, and usually you have to hit a buzzer, right? You hit a buzzer, beep, and somebody answers you. Can I help you? Yeah. Joe Pangaro, I'd like to come in and see John Davis. I have an appointment. And they look that up. And if you have an appointment, they buzz you and you come in and you go in. So not necessarily suspicious. But how about if I had just been fired or if I had quit under adversarial circumstances 2 weeks earlier, and now I show up at the business and I don't have an appointment. Now I get there, the person at the other end of the buzzer may know me, so, oh, Joe's here, he must want to talk to a manager or something. Come on in, Joe. Bad move. Bad move. I don't have an appointment. What am I doing there? I'm either an employee who had a problem. Now, maybe I just want to come back and apologize to the boss. Maybe I want to ask for my job back. Maybe it's innocent. Maybe I want to come back and settle some scores. And that's how sometimes these workplace violence happens. So we want to limit our access to these locations. So a set of eyeballs has to be on that door. Now, best of all worlds, I talked to, we listened to Bill Dallas, the man of faith here on Chasing Justice from the neighborhood. And Bill is very active in his church. And I went and I gave him some tips on what to do. Once the people get in the door for worship services, you know, there's usually a specific time for that. You know, 7 o'clock Mass, 9 o'clock Mass, 4:30 Mass, whatever it is, or whatever time your church service is or your synagogue service or whatever. There's a certain time. And people have to be there because it's going to start. So if it's 4 o'clock, you have some people there, monitors with radios and capabilities to call for help. All right, somebody has to be standing by to make that call should you need it as people are arriving. And people are watching for that suspicious behavior. Is somebody coming in? Are they looking around? Do they look like they're nervous? Do they appear to be hiding things? Are they holding back outside the main worship area waiting for people to get in? Those kind of things are suspicious. You want to take a look at that person a little closer. What are they doing? Maybe at that point you call the local police and say, there's a guy acting strange here. Could you send a car over? So at least you start the process moving. But once that last person is in, it's 5 o'clock Mass. At 5:05, you know, the stragglers come running in. Close the doors to the main worship area. Close the doors and secure them. So that if people are going to come in and you let everybody know, if you're late to the service, you have to come through the main door and there'll be somebody there to greet you. Now that person can see you come up to the door. They can see if you're looking suspicious or strange or whatever. And if you're not, they ask you a couple questions, come on in, they admit you to the church service. If you are suspicious in any way, or if you're concerned about the behaviors of this person, you don't let them into the main room, right? So these are very, very simple things. So what does your mall do? Does your mall have training for all the employees? And they really should. They should work with their local police, and they should run drills in that facility. That's an extremely important thing to do, is to run drills inside the facility. Now, you can do that before the day starts. You can do that after the day ends so that the staff members in that mall are trained on what to do, like that young lady in the New Jersey Mall. She knew what to do because she was practiced. It was really a good thing to see. All right, so training our people. Do you have security guards in the mall? Now, security is a cousin of law enforcement. Right, security personnel are cousins of law enforcement. Many of them are either people who are trying to get into the field of law enforcement and they have a desire to be a part of that world, or they are retired law enforcement and they're doing this as a second job or something to back up. But do they get enough training? You know, we train them on how to talk to people, how to take notes, how not to get sued. I mean, that's a big reality of training. But do we train them on de-escalation techniques? Do we train them on spotting suspicious people? Do we train them on active shooter drills? Or do we just go through the motions? So these are important things. So there's questions that you can ask of your church, of your synagogue, of your any other kind of religious facility. You can go to your boss at work. You can go to your school principal, and you can start asking things. What type of training is provided for our security personnel and our regular people? Can we increase that? Do we offer training to the client stores? Okay. Do you go there and say, hey, here's some training for this individual store? If your mall is not going to do it and you work in a store, tell your manager. You and the other employees want training. You want to know what to do in an emergency. All right. Are there cameras monitored by people? You know, it's great to have cameras. There are some fantastic cameras. One of our sponsors here, A-Plus Technology from Bayshore, New York, they have some of the most sophisticated, state-of-the-art, affordable cameras that I have ever seen in the security industry. Well, they're great, and they can really help us. The HD is unbelievable. You can see license plates. You can see specific people. But you have to have somebody watching the camera. If you just have cameras there recording, that's great for the evidence afterwards to tell us who did what to who. but it doesn't help us to call for help. So you got to have somebody monitoring those cameras at all times. Are they skilled? Do they know what to look for on the camera? So this is important. What is the safety culture at your facility, in your religious facility, your place of business, or your school? Is there a mindset of security that we need to make that second nature, that we get rid of that it'll never happen here to the, we're going to be aware and prepare. If this happens, what do we do? All right, so if you can't run full-scale drills, what else can you do? You can do tabletop scenarios. I don't know how many times I have to say this. Tabletop scenarios are excellent. You sit everybody around the table, you have a pre-set up scenario, and then you let people think through the problem. Because I say this all the time, and this is really true. You do not want people to be thinking about what to do in an emergency, be the only time they think about it is when it actually happens. Because that's not how the human brain works. You know, our human brain has to kind of think about something ahead of time and give us some ideas, because in a danger, traumatic situation, there's fight, flight, or freeze. And many people will do a combination of all three. And you get people who are just petrified and they can't function and they don't think correctly. They make rash judgments and all those kind of things we talk about in crisis situations. So doing a tabletop lets everybody that's involved with the store, the facility, the church, the synagogue, whatever, sit and think and talk about what would they do if somebody showed up at the back door and they tried to get in and they had a weapon. What could you do? Who would make the calls? Do you have any idea? How would you make the calls? How would you alert the world that you need help? Remember, here on America Out Loud, I had printed a column going back a couple of months. You can look it up under my columns, called The Three Pillars of Survival. And those three pillars are essential to every location for safety and security. Pillar number one is preparation. Preparation means understanding the potential threat, practicing with your people, having a plan, and then putting that plan into place. All right, so preparation is very important. Then communication. How do you tell everybody in the facility that there is a problem? Is there an intercom? Is there a way for people to talk to each other and say, hey, call for help. There's a guy here with a weapon. Do you have handheld radios? Do you use cell phones? Are you using some type of an app on a phone? These are things that you can do. They're affordable. You can find them out there. All right, so that's two. You have preparation and communication. Then notification is the third pillar of survival. How do you call for help? Now, if you're lucky and you have a police officer who is either on an extra duty detail at your facility or happens to be there as an assignment by their chief of police, you know, that officer has a radio. So they hear or see something going on. He or she can simply call headquarters and say, we need help here. There's something going on. But if you don't have that luxury of an on-duty police officer or extra duty police officer, how are you going to notify the outside world that you need help? You know, I found a program. I'm always looking for these programs. You know, what can actually work? Because there's a million of them out there, and the reality is not all of them work, or they don't work to the level you want them to. I found this thing called Punch Alert, P-U-N-C-H Alert, Punch Alert. It's a phone-based app, but it can go on all your computers and everything, and it gives you instantaneous communication with everybody in your facility and the police and 911. So you hit a button, boom, and it sends the message out. All right, there's lots of different ones out there. Punch Alert seems pretty good to me. You know, I'm actually going to meet with those people, and so I can understand it a little more. Because one of the things I do, as you know, I've spoken about, is I let people know what are good things. You know, I've taken the time to research these things, but not everybody can. So I try and take a look when I can and see what's going on. All right, so remember, be aware and prepare. Limit the access to your location. Make sure you have the three pillars of survival covered. Preparation, communication, and notification. You have to be able to do those three things to keep your facility safe. If you have questions, if you're from a religious facility, from a store, from a business or a school, take advantage of the resource you have here in me, Joe Pangaro, Lieutenant Joe, and True Security. This is what I do, Pangaro Training, True Security Design. We come out, we do threat assessments, we help you put policies together, we can train your people. These are the things I do. This has become my passion in life. This is my mission to keep people safe. So don't ever hesitate. We have an email right here, jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. You can always send me an email. I mean, I like when you send me an email and say you like the show, you like the neighborhood. That's great. But if you have a question about safety and security, about your child's school, about the business you work in, about the religious facility you pray to God in and you're not sure what to do, reach out to me. Let me know what your questions are, and I'll be happy to help you. But I'll do whatever I can. All right, so that's this week on Chasing Justice. Here at our new time, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 to 4. I'm glad to be here, glad to hear a whole new audience out there. We're bringing our 12 o'clock audience to 3 o'clock, and we're taking you through basically to drive time. And listen to the other shows here. Lieutenant Randy Sutton is an excellent law enforcement guy. I love his show. Randy has been very good to me. So make sure you give a listen to him. Remember my sponsors, TrueSecurityDesign.com, JPangaro.com, that's me. You can go take a look at that. MCONIT, E-M-C-O-N-I-T. They are third-party data recovery people. They can help keep you cyber world safe. And The Blue Magazine, T-H-E, TheBlueMagazine.com, and A-PlusTechnology.com. Fantastic, good, decent companies that are out there to do the right thing for everybody. So until we meet again, ladies and gentlemen, it's nice to be here, and we'll see you next week on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.